MSW Media. Hi, everyone. Today's episode of the Daily Beans is brought to you by my favorite daily nutritional drink, Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/dailybeans to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. We thank them for their support. News, hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. Today, a judge orders Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio detained pending trial. The Senate passes a bill to stay on daylight saving time by unanimous consent. A new document emerges about the plan to attack the Capitol that was mentioned in the Tarrio indictment. A second 1-6 Mike Pence script change is revealed through committee testimony. A Dem super PAC is filing a complaint with the FEC alleging Trump has violated federal campaign finance law by spending political funds on a 2024 run without formally declaring himself a candidate. And that is just about all the news we could squeeze in today. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
There is actually another story breaking right now that we're going to have to cover.
Of course there is. There's always a story breaking right while we're recording.
And we're going to have to cover that tomorrow. But basically, the January 6th panel has obtained that, you know, that documentary crew that was following Enrique Tarrio around?
Yes.
The January 6th committee has it.
Ooh.
And so does the Department of Justice, because they mentioned it in their pretrial detention motion. And speaking of the pretrial detention motion, I'm going to be talking about that and some Easter eggs and some other stuff with Glenn Kirshner later in the show. You don't want to miss that. He is the host of Justice Matters and former federal prosecutor, worked at the DC U.S. Attorney's Office for like two decades working on murders and stuff. Like,
amazing. He's a badass. Yeah.
Prolific dude. And he's got a lot of fans, I know, that also listen to this program. So that's very cool. We have a lot of news to get to, as you could tell from the intro. Not, Dana, not close to our record, but
no.
still quite a bit.
We just want to, you know, we want to have some room for growth.
You do. Always room for growth. Always room for more news. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right. First up, a document found by federal prosecutors in the possession of Enrique Tarrio contained a detailed plan to surveil and storm government buildings around the Capitol on January 6th last year. That's according to people familiar with the document. The document, titled 1776 Returns, which makes me wonder if Lauren Boebert read it, because she tweeted 1776 when the attack was happening. This 1776 Returns document was cited by prosecutors last week in that far-right leader charge of Enrique Tarrio, the indictment. He's the former head of the Proud Boys extremist group, and he was indicted with conspiracy. I imagine superseding indictments to come. The indictment of Mr. Tarrio described the document in general terms, but the people familiar with it added substantial new details about the scope and complexity of the plan it set out for directing an effort to occupy six House and Senate office buildings and the Supreme Court on January 6th. Many questions about how the document came to be, including who wrote it and how it was made and how it got to Enrique, are still out there. We still haven't answered those questions. And it got to him, by the way, on December 30th, 11 days after Trump tweeted about the wild protest. And that was as Donald was engaged in a series of overlapping schemes to keep himself in power. The people familiar with the document said other evidence the government has gathered suggests it may have been provided to Enrique Tarrio by one of his girlfriends at the time. The document could help explain why prosecutors chose to charge Mr. Tarrio with conspiracy, even though he was not at the Capitol during the attack. And it appears to be the first time that prosecutors have sought to use evidence of a specific written plan to storm and occupy government buildings in their wide-ranging investigation into the attack and, of course, the stuff that led up to it. And it's broken into five parts: infiltrate, execution, distract, occupy, and sit in. It's a 9-page document. It recommends recruiting at least 50 people to enter each of the seven government buildings and advises protesters to appear unsuspecting and to not look tactical.
Whoops.
I think it's because they didn't want to be charged with gang charges. You remember, Dana, when in some of the documents and testimony, when they were like, look, we can't wear colors because they're going to charge us with gang crimes. And so that was why they were trying to avoid all that. Little they know, they're, you know, getting hit with seditious conspiracy and obstructing an official proceeding, but they were worried about gang laws. So anyway, after ensuring the crowds at the buildings are full and ready to go, the document says that leads and seconds should enter and open doors for others to go in, quote, causing trouble to distract security guards if necessary. Should the crowd fail to gain entrance to the buildings quickly, the document suggests pulling fire alarms at nearby stores, hotels, and museums to further distract the guards or police. And that makes me think of those pipe bombs.
Absolutely.
Dana, that were placed at the DNC and near the RNC. Were those placed by these militias? And has any cooperator or, you know, flipper told the feds about who placed them? Does it have to do with the FBI raids on Bertino and Stewart, those other Proud Boys leaders that have yet to be arrested, that were raided while Tario was being arrested? They seem to be connected, right? Because you wouldn't want to arrest Tario and then wait to raid the other two guys.
Right.
Unless they were all doing something together. Now, Tario had a detention hearing today, Tuesday, and he's been ordered to remain in custody pending trial.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very good. Department of Justice argued for pretrial detention because he destroyed government property worth over $1,000, which means he's a risk to the public. And he posed a risk to other witnesses. He could be expected to destroy evidence or perhaps obstruct justice. And he was a flight risk. And I'm getting a lot of questions, Dana, about whether he's a mole. Because, you know, he's been known to be a snitch.
Right.
An FBI informant. Not this time, I don't think. And I'm 101.2% sure. So I'm just barely 100% sure.
Just barely over.
He was an informant like a decade ago, but he's in actual fucking trouble this time. Now, he could flip and cooperate either fully or partially, but he's not a mole, you guys. The FBI would not allow a person to endanger the lives of 140 police officers and help carry out a coup just to let him keep criming. You know, that's when the danger like outweighs, when the risk outweighs the benefit of,
right,
of having an IC continue to do crimes, you don't allow that to happen. They're like, well, let's just see if he kills six more people. That's not how being an informant works.
Yeah, thank goodness that's not how being an informant works. I'm so glued to this story, though, because I want to know what happens with this guy. Because if he gets charged for all this, is guilty and wasn't actually at the Capitol, that sets precedent for another person who got this going and was not at the Capitol because he's got bone spurs. All right. A Democratic super PAC says it's filing a formal complaint.
That's going to be his defense. So, no, I have bone spurs.
Yeah.
I can't do coups.
Yeah. When I said I was going to walk down there with you, I didn't mean.
My doctor says I'm unable to coup because I have bone spurs.
Oh, God. I'm a piece of shit. A Democratic super PAC said it is filing a formal complaint with the Federal Elections Commission on Monday, accusing the former guy of violating campaign finance law by spending political funds on a 2024 presidential bid without formally declaring himself a candidate. God forbid. The complaint uses Mr. Trump's own words about a 2024 run. It's a quote. I know what I'm going to do. We're not supposed to be talking about it yet from the standpoint of campaign finance laws. That was more of like a Bernie Sanders meets Donald Trump impression. It's fine. Everything's fine. He said that in the fall. Now, to accuse him of improperly using his existing political committees to advance a presidential run, that's what he's in trouble for. Federal rules require those who raise or spend more than $5,000 in support of a presidential campaign to register with the Federal Elections Commission. And Mr. Trump has repeatedly teased that he plans to run for a president again, saying at the Conservative Political Action Conference last month, quote, we did it twice, we'll do it again. But
we did it twice, we lost once, we actually lost twice, but we really lost once, but we're going to do it again.
You know what? Do that part again, that lost part. Let's do that. But he formally filed for re-election the day of his inauguration in 2017. Mr. Trump has not done that so far in 2024. Now, such a filing would set off restrictions on how he could raise and spend campaign money, including his existing war chest. So that's probably why he hasn't, because he's going to pocket as much of the shit as he can.
Yeah.
Now, Donald told the Fox News host, Sean Hannity, in July of 2021 that he had made up his mind about another White House bid. Now, a month later, he said on the Fox News again, sort of like the Facebook, He said on Fox News again that it was, quote, unbelievably stupid campaign finance laws that prevented him from directly stating his intentions. Let me put it this way. I think you'll be happy, and I think that a lot of your friends will be very happy, but I'm not actually allowed to answer it. That's what Donald said. It makes it very difficult if I do, meaning I can't steal money if I say this out loud.
Yeah, and I, you know, I can't spend any of my money
right
on running for president if I, you know, unless I say that I am. And if I say that I am, then they're going to scrutinize all of my spending.
And I'm already under enough scrutiny, so I don't want to raise any more flags, even though that's what he does. He just raises them and raises them. Now, nothing legally bars Donald from declaring he's running for president, but he would be subject to additional fundraising limits and disclosure requirements if he did that. So once a politician has decided to run for federal office and began fundraising, the person's supposed to file paperwork declaring the candidacy. Now, there's also an interim step for those who are testing the waters of a run. So obviously, he hasn't done that either. The complaint would appear unlikely to generate any crackdown by the Federal Elections Commission, which is equally divided between commissioners aligned with the Democratic and Republican parties, and it often deadlocks on contentious matters. Now, the watchdog agency's investigations process is also notoriously slow. So a complaint to the commission related to the pre-candidacy activities of Jeb Bush, who announced his run for president in 2015, AG, that was still in court as recently as December 2021. It was still in court.
We got to fucking...
Snail's pace.
We got to reform the fuck out of the FEC. That should be... Damn.
Yep.
Yeah, it's got no teeth. It's totally ineffective. I love some of the people on, like Broussard and Weintraub, who are on the FEC, but they can't do anything. They can never do anything.
No.
And as it turns out, Dana, Mike Pence made more than one major change to the vice presidential script for presiding over the January 6th counting of electoral votes. This is brand new stuff. Pence's decision to craft and employ his own unprecedented language as he presided over the final step of the 2020 election reflected his resistance to a pressure campaign by then-President Trump to subvert the process. Pence's rewrite has since drawn the attention of congressional investigators. He also made a second, subtler, but no less significant change to the script on January 6, 2021. That's according to the newly released documents and testimony that we've been reviewing. The previously unreported adjustment, further illustrating his pushback to the Trump-led gambit, involved a simple question that he asked each time a state's electoral vote results were introduced. He asked, "Are there any objections?" No vice president has added those words since Al Gore presided over his own defeat in 2001. Notably, Gore was the only one to have done it since at least 1937.
Wow.
Pence embraced the long dormant rhetoric in part as a rebuttal to Eastman, John Eastman. Yeah, because Pence's counsel, Greg Jacob, told congressional investigators, "Hey, you know what John Eastman tried to do? He tried to pressure my guy, Vice President Pence, into violating the Electoral Count Act." According to Jacob's testimony, as well as contemporaneous emails released by the January 6th committee, I call it the smoking gun email, Eastman spent several days before January 6th pushing Pence and Jacob to embrace a fringe legal theory. Pence could simply refuse to count some of Biden's electors. When it became clear that Pence would not go along, Eastman fell back on another proposal. Pence, he said, should declare the election in dispute and recess the session for 10 days, giving Republican-led state legislatures a chance to appoint new electors. Senator Ted Cruz assembled 10 GOP colleagues to embrace that similar push. But Jacob pushed back. That's Pence's top lawyer.
Right.
He argued that sending the election to the states to select the new electors would violate the Electoral Count Act's provisions, giving federal lawmakers the chance to decide which ones count. In no previous election, he noted, even in ones with some disputed states, had Congress sought the input of state legislators to resolve disputes. The Electoral Count Act, Jacob noted, says the vice president, quote, shall call for objections after each state. And Pence made the decision to explicitly add those statements to articulate his disagreement with Eastman's theory. And I still believe Pence knew that Eastman was trying to discredit the Electoral Count Act by poking holes in it so that he could convince Pence to violate it just a little bit more and delay it for those 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that smoking gun email where Eastman said to Greg Jacob, hey, we've already violated the Electoral Count Act when Pence let debate go on for more than 2 hours for Arizona. And then Pence didn't call the question after the debate. Remember, Vice President Pence violated the Electoral Count Act. So obviously Pence doesn't care about the Electoral Count Act. So Pence should violate it just one more little time by delaying the account for 10 days.
If you're already going to do something illegal, let's just do another one. You're already in trouble. Come on.
Yeah. I think that had to do with why they debated for so long and why they were delaying, not just to let the rioters overrun the Capitol, but to force Pence to violate the Electoral Count Act so that they could either threaten him with that. Hey, you violated the law, bro. You better do what we say.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if any of those 111 emails being reviewed in camera right now have any kind of threat like that in them. We'll see.
We will see. Now, this story surprised me when I heard it, but the Senate on Tuesday, I was like, what? Okay. The Senate on Tuesday approved a proposal to make daylight saving time permanent, which if passed in the House and signed by President Biden would mean Americans would never have to set their clocks back an hour and lose an hour of afternoon daylight in the fall and winter. Although it does mean it would be dark still at 8:30 in the morning in the middle of December.
Fine with me. It's totally fine.
I know. Now, if enacted into law, it would also mean that early risers, like I said, they lose an hour of daylight in the mornings of November, December, January, and February, which I actually enjoy. Now, I know it's weird. I'm a morning person. I'm a comic. I'm an anomaly.
Same.
Yep. In New York, for example, under the current law, the sun will rise at 7:15 on December 21st. Now, that's the shortest day of the year. So if the Sunshine Protection Act becomes law, the Sunshine Protection Act, they won't do anything for global warming and climate change, but they're protecting the sun. This is what they're calling it. I can't. The Sunshine Protection Act becomes law. New Yorkers won't see the sunrise, like I said, until 8:15 that day. So it's a very long night for New York, but they don't sleep anyway. It's okay. It's a city that never sleeps. Now, on the other hand, instead of the sun setting at 4:31 p.m. late December, which is miserable for everyone, it would set at 5:30 p.m., giving people a little more daylight to enjoy the freezing cold afternoons in New York. Senator Whitehouse, who I love, the lead Democratic sponsor of the legislation, he said its passage would be welcomed by the people in his home state, and that's Rhode Island. Now, if it passes the House and Biden signs it, it would not take effect for a year, and giving the transportation and airline industry some time to make the adjustment, as well as Apple and anything else that changes automatically. They're going to have to refigure all that shit. So we'll see what happens.
I know we're going to have brand new Y2K companies. Remember Y2K?
Uh-huh.
All these companies came out and they're like, you better pay us to fix your stuff. It was total scam. But we're going to have a bunch of fraud guarantee sunshine companies coming out of the woodwork to help you prep for, yeah, you know, the big changeover. But I would be very glad about this. I can tell you, I promise everybody, I lived in Arizona for a long time. It's fine. It's really not that big of a deal. They don't do it. I don't think anyone should. But yeah, I think it's funny that it passed with unanimous consent. Like, that's the one thing that 100 senators can agree on, is like, yeah, that thing. Not voting rights, though.
Right. Of course. Mm-hmm. No. But let's make sure that we fix the Sunshine Act. Let's protect the sun. Oh, my God.
I love the Protect the Sunshine Act. Protect it, but only in the afternoons. Okay.
That's right. And not from burning up the planet, just so that we don't have to, just so we don't have to get up so early in the summer.
Where's the Protect the Earth Act?
Oh, my God.
That's volume two, I hope. Okay, now let's focus on Protect the Earth. All right, everybody, we're going to be right back with Glenn Kirshner. And then after that, we're going to have the good news. So stick around. You don't want to miss it.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. It's AG. And this portion of The Beans is brought to you by Helix Sleep. Sleep is my favorite thing. Sleep is essential for our health. The worst part about insomnia is waking up drowsy and exhausted. This has been a problem for me in the past. Initially, I thought it had something to do with stress and anxiety. But actually, it was my terrible mattress. And thanks to Helix Sleep, I am sleeping like a baby again. No matter what sleep style or body type you have, Helix has a mattress for you. You can find your ideal mattress with their quick online quiz at helixsleep.com/dailybeans. You can choose from a wide array of mattresses, from soft, medium, and firm, to those that regulate body temperature, those that align your spine, and there's even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size sleepers. The Helix Midnight is just what the doctor ordered for me because I'm a side sleeper who prefers a medium firm mattress. And now, thanks to Helix, I fall asleep easily, sleep like a baby. I don't wake up in the middle of the night. And in the morning, I'm refreshed and alert, and I don't have any soreness. Helix has over 12,000 five-star reviews. They were awarded number one best overall mattress pick of 2019 and 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine recommend Helix to improve your sleep. And they have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it for 100 nights risk-free. And when I say risk-free, I mean risk-free. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund all your money. And they even have financing options available. Helix right now is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for listeners at helixsleep.com/dailybeans. That's helixsleep.com/dailybeans for up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Today, I'm joined by the host of Justice Matters and former federal prosecutor, Glenn Kirshner. Glenn, hello.
Hey, G. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I wanted to have you on today because we have a lot of breaking news going on behind the scenes. And when I say behind the scenes, I mean behind the wall of the very important Ukraine coverage that is, you know, that we're seeing on in the media now. But a couple of questions for you about some things that have popped up here in the last couple of days. We now have the first statement in a federal filing tying Trump to the conspiracy to obstruct the electoral vote count. You and I have been talking about this for a very long time, right? The pyramid, getting the overt criminals, the foot soldiers on 1512C2, obstructing an official proceeding and then working up the ladder to establish the plot to obstruct the count, and that it includes Donald. And of course, asking several boots on the ground guys to sign affidavits saying they wanted to stop the count on Trump's orders. And of course, securing guilty pleas that they intended to stop or delay the count. And now we have Department of Justice connecting Donald's tweet about the quote unquote wild protest directly to the actions of the Proud Boys, namely Enrique Tarrio, in this latest court filing, you know, to detain him pre-trial. But you say that it goes back even further than the December 19th Trump wild tweet to something else Donald said. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And, you know, AG, sometimes I feel I'm a little slow on the uptake, but it continues to come into full focus. And I kind of see this in part as an old Army prosecutor. I see it in part as a federal prosecutor. But I think now, and you were the first one that caught, as far as I noticed, caught this little nugget in the Enrique Tarrio detention motion, whereby the prosecutor said, no, Judge, Enrique Tarrio should not be released back to the community. This is not catch and release. He needs to be jailed pending trial because he's both a danger and a flight risk. So, and you noted that they said that in, I think, the opening salvo, when they were relating some of the facts, that the Proud Boys mobilized when Donald Trump sent out that tweet on December 19th, come to D.C. on January 6th, will be wild. Interestingly, they didn't name Donald Trump, but I think we all know who sent that tweet. So you picked that up. I retweeted it. I didn't even pretend it was original thinking on my part. And then I think there are three dates that basically provide almost everything you need to see that Donald Trump is criminally culpable for the conspiracy. So if we go back to September 29th of 2020, that's when he basically told the Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. That was his recruiting call, right? Mm-hmm. Then on December 19th, with that tweet, come to DC on January 6th, will be wild. He was activating the Proud Boys after telling them to stand by. On January 6th, he deployed and he directed the attack. He directed the Proud Boys and others. And when you look at the language he used on January 6th, he said, go to the Capitol and stop the certification of Joe Biden's win. Helpfully, from this old prosecutor's perspective, he called Joe Biden's win the steal. We know it wasn't a steal. We can prove with Donald Trump's own executive branch officials that it wasn't a steal, and they told him so. So what does that do? That provides direct evidence of his corrupt intent in a way that I rarely had when I was prosecuting cases. So I think those three dates, you know, he told his troops to stand by, he activated them, and then he directed them to attack. This is a conspiracy indictment that drafts itself. And Donald Trump is either the leader of the conspiracy or the hub of a hub and spoke conspiracy. But, you know, I am more convinced than ever that the Department of Justice is building precisely to what you and I have been discussing for so long.
Yeah. And one of those officials, executive branch officials, was obviously Bill Barr. I mean, there were so many. But then we also have those Eastman emails, right? 111 of which we know one. We know what one of them says, because Greg Jacob, Vice President Mike Pence's general counsel, gave that to the committee and testified about it, where Eastman said, hey, look, you broke the law. We broke the law already. Debate went on for more than 2 hours. The vice president already broke the law. So why not just break it one more little time and delay this 10 more days? And then we also have testimony from Greg Jacob saying that Eastman told Pence and presumably Trump, but we don't know, hey, no Supreme Court justice is going to buy this. So, you know, we need to do this a different way. And that sort of goes to corrupt intent, because that shows that they all knew, at least in the Pence sphere, that Donald lost the election and that they were violating the law. But there's something else I wanted to ask you about. There was a document, according to the New York Times, that was found on Tarrio, Enrique Tarrio. And that document instructed militia members. There was five things, but one of the instructions was to cause trouble at nearby buildings to distract law enforcement, like by pulling a fire alarm, for example. But that sent off alarm bells in my head and made me think of those planted pipe bombs. And I just think it's very interesting that Jim Jordan sent a letter to Christopher Wray on March 9th saying, hey, we have a whistleblower who says that the FBI isn't giving any information to my committee. They're only giving information to the January 6th committee. We demand to know what's happening with the pipe bombs. And then the day before that is when Enrique Tarrio was arrested and warrants were served. And the FBI raided two other Proud Boys named Stewart and Bertino, who haven't been charged yet. Now, why would you raid someone's house as opposed to simply arresting them like they did with Tarrio or so many of the other Proud Boys or Oath Keepers? I can't help but think that the pipe bomb is somehow wrapped up in this.
You raid somebody's house when you have probable cause to believe there's evidence of crime contained therein and a judge has issued a search warrant. So that's why you would raid a house and not just arrest somebody that you have an arrest warrant for. I have a feeling, given the more we learn about the really concerted effort, the conspiratorial effort of the Proud Boys to disrupt in all ways, large and small, it feels like we're going to hear that the pipe bombs were perhaps a Proud Boys production as well. We don't know that yet.
Right.
But the other thing is, these boys aren't quite so proud. And I have a feeling we're going to have any number of Proud Boys flipping. We've heard some reports early on that in days past, Enrique Tarrio would try to save himself by providing information to the feds. You know, once you go down that road, you're likely to go down that road again. So, and it's not just Tarrio. I'm sure it's any of these other Proud Boys who I really think are the weakest of weak people among us. These people are going to flip. These people are going to try to save themselves. They're going to sell out their fellow Proud Boy members. And I have a feeling at some point the floodgates will open and we're going to see lots of cooperating witnesses.
Yeah. And I remember Enrique Tarrio even saying to a documentary film crew, by the way, which is just bananas that they had so many documentary film crews documenting their crimes on January 6th, said, hey, Stuart Rhodes and I, because they had just met in that parking garage briefly. And Tarrio said, hey, we don't get along. He and I don't get along, but we get along for this. So, you know, they don't get along. That tells me a lot. And we know that a guy named Joshua James has already pled guilty to seditious conspiracy.
Yeah.
That's a heavy thing to plead guilty to and is cooperating. And, you know, if somebody knows who planted those pipe bombs and amidst these cooperators, and I think we will find out who.
I agree. We're going to find out who. And I don't want to circle back to Eastman, but it really was just so sweet to see him put in writing that let's just engage in some minor violations, a little light treason, you know. He is so ready to flip himself because he's going to get got. I mean, I think the moment that I realized he was done was when he claimed his own memo was, quote, crazy if anybody believes I meant what I said in that memo. I mean, talk about consciousness of guilt. So, you know, I do think, you know, we've been waiting a long time for the floodgates to open and for consequential indictments to start dropping. I have a feeling we are closer now than we've ever been.
Yeah, I think Tario is definitely consequential, more consequential even than I think Stuart Rhodes. I think he probably will eventually be charged with seditious conspiracy. And one last quick thing. It feels like Eastman was trying to punch holes in the Electoral Count Act to discredit it so that he could push Pence to violate it a little bit further. And we saw that in that email where he said, hey, you know, you called for debate after, you know, without calling the question after debate ended. So you broke it. You violated it. We also violated it by having debate go for more than 2 hours on Arizona. I wonder why debate went for more than 2 hours on Arizona, by the way. But it seemed like a plan. And now, you know, we just recently learned that Pence actually changed his language a second time when he was delivering his, you know, speech on the floor to count the votes. The first was, you know, he changed up that first part of the speech, but then he added, and every state can object after, you know, when they're brought up. And he did that to push back on Eastman. And Greg Jacob, you know, testified to that. It just seemed like Eastman was trying to blow holes, you know, blow open the Electoral Count Act to make it seem not as sacrosanct as it was, so that he could either push Pence to violate it or threaten Pence. Say, hey, you broke the law. You violated the law. Do what we say, or, you know, we're gonna tell on you.
And it feels wrong to even entertain the thought that Pence is something of a hero. That just feels dirty to me. And yet, this thing could have ended up a whole different way had Pence not stayed strong and stayed faithful to the Constitution. So, with all of the quibbles I have with that man, particularly on policy, you have to give it to him that he stood up to this barrage, and, you know, he didn't necessarily have to.
Yeah, I've been handing it to Greg Jacob. That's who I'm, because I, you know, I don't know him as well as I know Pence, so I have no problem calling him a little bit more of a hero. But I appreciate your time today. Everybody check out Justice Matters. I know you've got a video out about this call to action by Donald Trump, how it involves him in this conspiracy, how you do not need a tacit agreement in order to be a co-conspirator. And all the evidence that could lead to his indictment. Now, it seems to me they are investigating. It seems clear to me they are investigating him at this point, which is, you know, all I've been asking for. We'll see if they are able to put the evidence together to indict him.
Yeah, things are moving in the right direction. And, you know, we've waited a very long time, and we may have to wait a little longer, but I think we're going to get there.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time today, everybody. Glenn Kirshner. Stick around. We'll be right back with the good news. Hi, everyone. It's AG for the Daily Beans. And today, the Daily Beans is brought to you by AG, Athletic Greens, which is a health and wellness company that specializes in daily nutrition. And they are sponsoring today's show. We'd like to thank them very much. I absolutely love Athletic Greens and their AG1 formula. The modern world is packed with so many demands on our time. My schedule is very hectic. I'm also paleo, and I intermittently fast, and that leaves large gaps in my nutrition, especially since I'm perimenopausal. But AG1 has solved all that. You can let Athletic Greens help you too, because a single scoop of AG1 has everything that you need: multivitamins, multiminerals, probiotics, green superfood blend, 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food ingredients. And I find that taking AG1 in the morning keeps me focused and productive all day long. It's an easy habit to pick up. It's so convenient because it's replaced tens and tens of bottles of pills and probiotics that I have to keep in the fridge, and some in the cabinet and some over here, and the superfood stuff. Like, I had so many products, but this is all in one, and it's delicious. It's a great alternative to all those multiple supplements and pills, and it fits well with all the lifestyles: keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free. And in addition to containing less than 1 gram of sugar, AG1 has no GMOs, no chemicals, and no artificial ingredients. And it tastes amazing. Athletic Greens keeps their research current as well. In the past decade, AG1 has undergone 53 improvements based on the latest research. So I highly recommend AG1 for supporting your daily nutrition. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. That's when you visit athleticgreens.com/dailybeans today. Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/dailybeans to take control of your health and give AG1 a try. You'll be glad you did. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news. Well, we'll float on good news. It's on the way. All right. Hump day. Good news. What's up? Hello.
Let's do it. I like this. I like this day.
Mike. If you have any good news that you want to send us, or corrections or confessions, or just send photos of your pets or your happy place or your garden or anything you're crafting or making, or you want to tell us about your small business and what you're doing, you can send it all into us, including Whoopi stories, which I love, and photos from Halloween. Easter's coming up. We get the Easter bunny, you know, like kids like screaming, like scared of the Easter bunny. I love those photos. I'm probably sadistic, but send. I have some of me. I'll be happy to share on Twitter. And you can send those in at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Although, Dana, I do like happy children better.
Oh my God, I do too.
Yeah. And you guys have some of the cutest kids, especially when you send us those baby pictures. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I just saw this first picture in this. Oh my God. Okay.
that kid's guilty of something. All right. This is first up from Britt, pronouns she and her. Good morning, folks. You guys are awesome. I love listening to you every morning. A couple things first. Some good news to share, albeit a couple months late. I made partner
nice.
At the law firm I work for.
Congratulations.
Dude, Britt, that's big. Second, thank you both, but especially DG, for the apology regarding Brittany Griner. I remember hearing DG's comment and thinking that was an odd comment and very uncharacteristic of DG. I really appreciate your correction and apology. You guys have ovaries to admit when something was not done properly and move on. I wish more people would just admit when they're wrong, no defensiveness, no explanation, and just move on. You give me hope daily for a better world, especially with how vocal you are about supporting the queer community. The picture is of our younger son, who loves to dress up. Dressed up as the elf on the shelf, creepy smile. And
it's the creepy smile and eyes that get me on this. This is brilliant.
It is. He's totally watching you.
Britt, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And yeah, I mean, my girlfriend doesn't always appreciate when I say I'm wrong. I'm glad someone else heard.
I love these yellow shaker cabinets too. And look at there's the quality mug in the background. Very nice, very nice.
So yeah, cool. Represent. These are my peeps. Oh, it's me. That's what you're waiting for. All right, this next one's from Anonymous. No pronouns given on this. Dear AG, thank you for all your hard hitting and continued coverage of the Trump Russia scandal. My opposition to your preference for permanent daylight saving time is not a trolling, but a rather concern that you have a supremely anti-science view that is unfortunately espoused by scientifically naive Congress critters. There is a broad agreement that the, quote, change between regular and savings time is the main source of the problem, ranging from drunk driving incidents, heart attacks, even harsher sentences imposed by judges. So I agree that it should land one way or the other. We should minimize the number of changes. However, a permanent daylight savings time removes the very sense of what it means to be, quote, noon and midnight by position of the sun. Legislation against this is about as sane as a law that says pi is exactly 3. Your actual gripe is not with DTS, but rather with, quote, standard work hours. Now, wouldn't it be sounder to keep scientific time a ticking clock and standard as it is and get corporations to adjust their working hours? This is a complicated issue, not only beyond the 9 to 5, but also further into how school children typically deal with their own separate set of hours based on their parents' work schedules. The current daylight saving time situation for myself is causing scheduling problems with other countries. We do not turn on DST at the same time as other countries. This is largely due to the Energy Policy Act of 2005, in which George W. Bush's solution to climate change was to, quote, study it by unilaterally moving the change date by a few weeks as if that were a real solution. So there you go. Now, peace be to Ukraine. Peace be to all. Thank you for shining light on the bleak situation. And may we each, as you have, do our parts to support democracy.
You know what, Anonymous? I am 100% with you on that. And the reason that I want to stick with DST is because everyone else would have to change. The schools would have to change their timing. Work would have to change their time. Every business, everything else. And to try to get that to go, I mean, I assume if you just put everything on standard that people would change their hours. But I personally think that school should start later. Work should start later, especially school, because there are tons of scientific studies out there showing that like high school kids don't like to get up real early and they aren't very productive in the morning hours. I remember when I was a teenager, trying to get me out of bed was like a joke in the morning. I just wanted to sleep.
Oh,
like,
my
all
God.
Day.
I was up at 5:30 because I had 0 hour band practice. We are two definitely very different people.
Well, if I had to get up, I suppose I would have. Marching band?
Yes, I was section leader of the drum line. My little female body was center snare telling all these senior boys what to do. They did not appreciate it until they were like, oh, she knows what she's doing.
Oh, she's actually good.
Oh, she's actually good.
I bet that happened to me in comedy as well.
Right? I know. That's funny.
Somebody one time asked me, was like, does it suck to be a woman in comedy? And I'm like, actually, no, it's kind of cool because the bar is real low.
Yeah.
So like, I only have to be it's not because women aren't funny. It's because people think that women aren't funny incorrectly, by the way.
Yes.
It's fake news. It's disinformation. And so, you know, I said, look, if I'm as funny as the guys, I seem funnier because I'm a woman. So it actually makes my job kind of easier.
There you go.
For that prejudice, people underestimating you. Everybody knows if somebody underestimates you, it's a lot easier to wow them. So that's cool. I had no idea you were doing that. That's
really cool. We won drumline in every competition my entire high school career. So there you have it.
Oh, nice. Nice. I don't think I won anything. I was a really good golfer. Anyway.
Nice. Okay.
Catholic school, you know,
that's
what you do. Next up from Susan, pronoun she and her. Hi, Beans Queens and Co. I just wanted to thank you for your daily encouragement to seek help from a counselor, which I finally did. And I can already see the positive results of talking to my amazing therapist. I have reconnected with my love of reading by joining a virtual book club, have been reading books I stacked up but neglected, and started a thriving indoor garden of lettuce, spinach, basil, and mini tomato plants.
Yum.
My counselor also encouraged me to talk about things I used to enjoy doing, and I ordered an embroidery kit that I'm about to start. That's so cool. And by the way, buying books... Like there's three different kinds, right? There's three hobbies here with book reading. It's buying books and then stacking books up that you have yet to read and then actually reading them. Those are three different things. Those are three different things. My to be read pile is gigantic, by the way. Oh, look at these. She goes on to say, thank you for the encouragement you gave me when handling hard times and for helping me see that asking for help is okay. Love you all. For pet pics, I'm including a photo of three of our rescued kitties, each sleeping on their favorite blanket that is covering the leather couch. It's afternoon nap time, and sometimes they lure me in. Oh, look. Yeah, I would want to go right there and nap with those kitties.
Totally. Oh my God, so sweet. All right, this is from Sean, pronouns he and him. Dear AG, DG, Amy, and the Beans Crew. As Gen Xer, who lived through the end of the Cold War and the fall of the Berlin Wall, the current situation in Ukraine has shaken my foundations a little. On March 2nd, I donated to the funds set up by the National Bank of Ukraine, links are below, and bought $30 worth of Girl Scout cookies. What better thing to stress eat while worrying about the fate of the world? And yes, my two boxes of Thin Mints are in the freezer. Thank you for all you do. Boom. Thank you, Sean.
Awesome. By the way, I finally looked. I've been eating Girl Scout cookies, particularly the Thin Mints, for at least 40 years. And I finally looked to see how many calories. I was very pleasantly surprised to learn, Dana, there are fewer than 700 calories in an entire sleeve of Thin Mints.
Oh, my goodness.
You want to take the next one, too?
Oh, sure. This is from anonymous pronouncing him. This is my 16-year-old boy, Bosco, who has just had to be put down because of kidney failure.
No.
Oh, he's literally been my best friend over a decade. During my recovery, he was by my side every moment. His entire body was wrapped around, snuggling my head at times. It's so hard to lose a good friend, much harder to decide the time and place to lose them. I really didn't think I'd be as sad as I am. Losing someone you care about is a big bummer, for sure. And Bosco is a sweet baby. Look at that.
Look at the arms. Look at the little toe beans and the legs. Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, Anonymous. Yeah. What a sweetheart. Yeah, my boy's getting old too, and I'm trying to figure out how to prep myself. You know?
Yeah.
Like, But I will say this, and thanks to our patrons and the Leguminati, I was able to raise enough money to get his cancerous tumor removed In May, it'll be 3 years cancer-free. And so you all helped my buddy stick around for 3 years that I wouldn't have had before. So what I'm trying to do is to look at it that way. I've had 3 years that I probably wouldn't have had before if it weren't for this incredible community. So thank you all so much. Next up from Heidi, pronouns she and her, windowsill kitties. Our cat Blue was proof that what happens in the barn doesn't always stay in the barn. He moved to the city and quickly trained us that although he has needs to roam, he would always return at night. When we moved from one neighborhood to another, we were surprised by how many of our neighbors came to ask, is that gray cat yours? That's how we found out that he was a serial cheater. In our new home, he would walk down to the middle school in the afternoon just to greet the kids. The pinnacle of his cheating was when my daughter spotted him on the windowsill down the block. We didn't know the people who lived there, but he sure did.
My goodness.
Sadly, Blue crossed the Rainbow Bridge at the beginning of COVID. I'm sure he's brightening up the farm with all his antics. Yes, he's haunting all sorts of windowsills these days. We missed that giant fluffy brat. Photos show Blue chilling with his chub chubs. Aw, look at Blue.
So sweet.
I always wonder about that. I have the Bruce Willis sometimes gets out, not because I want him to, but because he's a dick. And I just have this picture. I have images in my head of like him in someone else's house getting fed and getting pets and, you know, love and stuff. And I get jealous, like, probably doesn't happen, but this it does. It happens in the world of cats.
So sweet.
As we now know. Thank you so much for all these submissions. If you have any submissions, and I'll make that clarification on daylight saving time, because I'm with you. If we could all just change our business hours and work hours and everything that we have to do during the day, standard time would probably be better.
Totally.
So I'll make sure to make that clarification when I'm arguing. And when I mentioned trolls, by the way, on Twitter, which I didn't mean like actual people who disagree with me. I mean, like there's bots out there who are against this bill. Like, you know, like John Miller, a bunch of numbers at the end, zero followers, just created an account out to take down Big Sunlight, I guess. I don't know. I thought it was a weird thing to have bots over, but they're out there. That's what I was referring to. If that's what you were referring to when you were talking to me. Anyway, Dana,
yes.
Any final thoughts?
No final thoughts other than I hope people are adjusting to daylight savings. It seems to be a big argument out there. No, just I got nothing. I think your closing thoughts are probably where mine are right now. Everyone's just trying to get through this week. It feels like a weird one. So,
Yeah, definitely. And we'll be back tomorrow, everybody. I imagine that Wednesday is going to be, which is what you're in right now as you're listening to this. But I imagine it's going to be a pretty big news day. I've got a couple of inside things that say that there's going to be some big news. And I don't want to get anybody too excited, but just a lot of news coming out in the next couple of days. So until we meet again, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health, and vote Blue over Q. I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg and Amy Carrero. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit MSWmedia.com.
MSW Media.